Okay, great. Anne has succeeded. We're being recorded. So welcome to the last Saturday of the month Mastery Foundation call. This month, we are going to have the big share for what occurred at the Northern Ireland Intensive 1, and it was our 10th annual intensive for Northern Ireland. So welcome to the call. And our connection question today is, so the request will be when you get to get connected is to share your name, where you're calling from today, and then a word or short phrase that conveys what has you support the work of the Mastery Foundation. Word or short phrase that conveys what has you support the work of the Mastery Foundation. And if two people talk at once, just be patient and it'll all work out.
Are you ready?
We're ready.
I am too, so I'm going to go.
Excellent.
Eugene, I'm phoning with a further conference here from Donegal with Cassandra and Patience and myself in the one room. And so the reason for my participation and contribution is that I get to contribute to the world one person at a time.
Brilliant. Thanks, Eugene.
This is Barbara, and I'm calling in from New York. And the reason that I participate is a future world in which everyone belongs.
Great.
This is Nancy, and I'm in Chicago. And I participate because of the experience I get of profound, loving connection.
Great.
This is Gordon. I'm sorry for the background noise. I'm at the Ferry Building Farmers Market in San Francisco. Great possibility, great people.
Perfect.
It's Patience in County Donegal in Ireland, and I participate out of the possibility to recreate the freedom to choose.
Oh, that's great.
This is Breed from Belfast, and I choose to participate in the Mastery Foundation because I get to hang out with such fabulous, generous people, and also by the possibility of unlimited possibility.
This is Cassandra. I'm in Donegal with Jean and Patience. And since this is my first year with the Mastery Foundation, I had to really discover my reason as I went through the through assisting with the course. But I've discovered that it's incredibly liberating for myself as well as the people who are actually taking the course.
That's great. Thanks, Cassandra.
It's Anne in Cambridge. And I participate because I want to put the right kind of power in the hands of the people who will use it for the right things.
Alan, this is Lucinda in Chicago, and I participate for the possibility of leadership where it matters the most.
And Lucinda, your voice is a little faint. Could you say again why you participate?
Oh, yeah. One reason.
Yeah.
I participate for the possibility of leadership where it matters the most.
Okay, brilliant. Well, I'll go now. This is Alan in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And what has me support and participate in the Mastery Foundation is profound trust of grassroots community leaders. I thought there were several more people I know are there. It's star 6 to mute and star 6 to unmute if you're having trouble getting in.
Maybe I need to check. Alan, can you hear me now?
Yes. Hi, Breach.
Hi, Alan. Then I spoke earlier, but you obviously didn't hear me.
No, I heard. I did hear you, Breach.
Oh, you did hear me. Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, good. Good.
Okay. Well, there may be one or two people who didn't get in that round, but if your voice comes back a little later, you can share. I think we'll proceed with the call and sharing a bit about Intensive One. We have on the call several members from the leader team and several members from the assisting team. So there's probably a half a dozen of us here who were actually at the intensive this past week. And I thought we'd start with just the big picture from Breach and also Ann. Breach, among your roles, you are accountable for the enrollment of participants from Northern Ireland. So I thought you could share a bit about who participated this year, you know, what categories of people, and were there certain people you were particularly pleased made it? Well, and as always, we'll be asking everyone to preserve anonymity of our participants, but everyone's always curious the sorts of folks that come to this invitation-only intensive. And then, Anne, since you essentially head up enrollment for the folks who come from outside Northern Ireland this year from Israel and also Cambodia by way of both France and the United States, I'll ask you after Reed talks a little bit to share something about the participants from other countries. So, Reed, if you could just start by sharing a bit about who was in Intensive One this year, which is the 10th intensive for people committed to peace and reconciliation in Northern Ireland.
Okay, we had 36 participants from Northern Ireland and the Republic. A few were from the Republic. Slightly more women than men, more or less even in terms of allegiance to Christianity, the various branches, including we had one Hindu. The people came from a range of backgrounds, community workers, very much grassroots community workers, teachers, police, the world of the arts. I think, was there any other general? Oh, yes, meditation and counseling.
And also British victims and clergy.
Oh, yes, victims. How could I forget the clergy? Victims and clergy.
Right, great.
And ex-prisoners.
Yes, and ex-prisoners. And were there, for you, Breach, any people that you were particularly keen to have participate this year that finally came, or?
Yes. There was one clergyman who said that, you know, he was trying to decide would he become, he's only part-time clergy, and part-time freelance consultant, and he wanted to decide would he return as a permanent minister, full-time. And to his amazement, he discovered that the big question he had to answer for himself was who he was as he opened any church door.
Brilliant.
So I was delighted. I was delighted he made that journey. There were several people then, from very, very grassroots community work, people who responded to the need in their local communities, but without any training, background, etc. And, you know, I was just delighted that they were there. And one person said it changed her whole life. Another person said that she now knew she was a person who had a voice.
Right. Got it.
So they, They come to my mind straight away. Then I just thought it was wonderful for the one person whose main interest was meditation, how her world view of meditation was just opened beyond the horizons of where she saw herself during the course. And then the couple who did marriage guidance counseling, and how their focus changed, and how they are a stand in the world for romance and love in marriage and in the work that they're doing. And maybe best of all was the teachers.
Yeah.
Because schools are fraught in Northern Ireland with all kinds of controversies and metaphorical walls and tunnels that people go down, and to see a group of people there from the teaching profession willing to move outside of their comfort zone with regard to what goes on in their schools, what the schools are doing, and I know that at least two schools are going to be big changes. And
yeah,
one of them is the largest single-sex school in Europe. But the principal was there from that school.
Wow. Yeah, it was. I have to say, having been on the leader team now for, I think, maybe the last 5 years, it was quite an impressive group of community leaders. And you can hear it when they introduce themselves the very first day. By what they're committed to, you can, you know, the room sort of rings with their commitment. So it was a very powerful group. But before we get further into who these people were and what the experience was at the intensive, and getting some more people to share about that, Anne, I just thought you could add something about the folks who came from other countries, which has become in a certain way a regular part of the Northern Ireland intensive. That we have people we call delegates from another conversation who come from either contexts with some similar challenges in some way or other. Last year there was several people from Cyprus. We've had groups from Israel before, and we had them again. And we also have had Cambodians who survived the Cambodian Holocaust. So, Anne, could you share who came this year and a little bit about what they're up to?
Yes. So we had 8 people from Israel, which is the largest group we've had from Israel in several years. 4 of them came from the organization that Amit Leshem is part of, the Van Leer Institute. And Van Leer actually paid for them to come because they're so interested in the work we're doing. A couple of them were academics, and a couple of them were staff members of Van Leer. And then we had 4 grassroots community leaders, two women who created an organization called Circles that is committed to bringing together ordinary Jewish and Arab citizens to get to know each other better. A woman who works for the Ministry of Education in Jerusalem and is also a volunteer with the Seeds for Peace organization and is very interested in leadership and finding ways through education. Israel has a very divided education system, so she's interested in finding ways through education to create more coexistence. And then the last was Mahmoud, our friend from Rahat. He's the kind of youth minister in the Bedouin city of Rahat, and the man we worked with the past 2 or 3 years with leadership programs for the young people in Rahat. So they were a fantastic group. And as usual, what the Irish learned about the Israelis and what the Israelis learned about the Irish was almost more significant to them than anything we had to say. So that was the Israel contingent. And then there were three people from the Cambodian American community. One, Mary Blatz again, who is the linchpin for that community in Long Beach, California, and is really struggling against huge odds, internal and external, to make that community whole. So she was there, and two people with her. One is a woman, Marie-Christine, is a nurse. She lives in Paris. She's about to retire and will move to Long Beach and work with Mary full-time in the community sometime within the next year. And the other was a really sweet young man in his 30s named Rata, who is Cambodian and worked for a long time with the United Nations on projects in and around Cambodia. And he's got his MBA, so he's kind of a business thinker while he's doing his nonprofit work. And he and Mary are working to connect the Cambodian American community in Cambodia, but also to find the resources and funding to add some real viability and sustainability to the work they've started. So those were the people who came from another conversation, but you know the Irish, they make everybody feel so welcome. There were no strangers in that room. They all really loved each other.
Right, so thank you. And just to paint the picture a little bit, so this is the group that shows up to participate, along with a leader team, which had three people from the United States, which was Ann Overton, who you just heard from, myself, Alan, and Michael Johnston, who may be able to join the call. He's off at another retreat this weekend. And Sister Breach, who you heard from earlier, were on the leader team and have been for some number of years now. And we also had an assisting team. We had five people creating the space, forming all the logistics, and generating Mastery Foundation's hospitality in the space. And three members of the assisting team are together in Donegal. You heard them earlier in the call, and I'm going to ask them to share in a moment. And maybe even you could start by sharing what this place, Dramontine, is like, because it's a retreat center Mastery Foundation has kind of fallen in love with and is now our regular place for Intensive One. So I was wondering if you guys could share a little bit about what Dramontine's like and then what your impressions were of the people as they came.
Well, I suppose I could do the history of it a bit. It's it was a stately home given over to the African missions in the late 19th century, and then expanded considerably as the church was sending missionaries to Africa in their hundreds and hundreds, and they were all trained there. And they built additions on, so there'd be more cells for these people who are being trained. As that situation changed, there eventually were no priests at all being trained to go to Africa. And it became a place where elderly priests who had spent 20, 30, 40 years in Africa could return to Ireland and live out their years. So one occasionally in this, and so like all stately homes, it was built on a hill. It has a lake or two around it, avenues of trees. In the country, it's not in any town or village. And occasionally, on the benches outside, one will be able to sit down and have a chat with some elderly priests who will happily tell you about their 47 years in Kenya or whatever. Now, since it was, rather than just sort of close it down or something, turned into this conference, which wonderful modifications and additions have been made. So it really has all the facilities that one could want of a conference center. and the rooms are en suite and so on. So they're not monks' cells anymore by a long shot.
Right.
Staff is great. The staff there is absolutely, there wasn't anything that we didn't ask for that we immediately had their attention and their service. People at the conference continued to praise the food, the accommodations, and how welcome they felt at Dramatine. And of course, we the workers welcomed, you know, the service, and the staff just continually support us.
The staff there, incidentally, seem to have a very hands-off attitude, so that they're not lingering over, ready to do what you say. They're just staying out of sight, and if you need them, then you call on them.
It was I have to say, I think one of the things that enrolled us in Dramatine, besides it being a half hour from Belfast in this paradise of a setting, is how really the distinction hospitality is present everywhere you walk in that space. And folks we serve come from such intense workplaces and intense communities dealing with heavy conflicts. To come to this place of total peace, I think, sets the stage very nicely for intensive one.
Agreed.
Can you say anything about your impression as the people arrived and who was there? Anybody that you guys met?
Well, on the first night, you were talking to the kind of people who were there. I had a young lady, early 20s. It was a mother, a daughter, and a mother team that came to the course. And it was interesting that she shared with me that she had come because she was really interested in having all this available for young people, because how it occurred to her was this kind of work was for people of her mother's age and older. And she was very surprised that the first night at the dinner of the young people that were there, and she was very pleased to see that. And that's something that she was going to take away from the course, was that she hoped that eventually that we might even just have courses for people of a certain age. And then to say that one of the girls from the Republic of Ireland happens to come from a village just about 6 miles from south of us here in Glenties. And about an hour and a half ago, we just came through that town and stopped in the pub where she was working today, her parents' pub, and we stopped there. And the person that enrolled her was there as well from last year.
Right.
And when I asked her, I said, well, are you glad she enrolled you? And I can't tell you how she went on and on and on. And again, I think she is a real stand for having this work for young people.
That's great. And I have to say, just my own report from that very first night of the program, which was this past Sunday night, there's a welcome dinner and a connection dinner that works much like the beginning of this phone call. And I happened to be sitting next to a young guy who was a teacher and who turned out to be a Protestant teacher in an all-Catholic school, which I thought was rather remarkable. And he told me the story about when, he was ready to go get his next job teaching. All his Protestant friends said, don't even bother to apply. They never hire a Protestant to work in a Catholic school. The schools themselves in Northern Ireland, like many places with this sort of divided community, are almost entirely segregated. Everyone would just assume that the staff would be segregated as well. But he was given the job. And he said, he teaches a certain government course in which he tells the students he's a Protestant, but the younger students don't realize it. It was very obvious he was quite popular with the kids. And he said the people he really can't tell are the people in the neighborhood he grew up in. Back in his Protestant neighborhood, he can't tell them where he's working. He just says he teaches.
Huh.
And, it's just remarkable to be sitting with people with that kind of commitment. And that kind of resolve that even, and by the way, this is a school in one of the rougher parts of town, so this isn't just any school with Catholic kids in it, but one of the rougher parts of town. So it's just awe-inspiring, and with the people from Northern Ireland, you have to pry a little bit to find out what they're really up to, because they're so modest, but truly awe-inspiring people is what I'm always struck by each time a new group gathers for that program.
Alan?
Yeah, go ahead, Ann.
I want to hear what Cassandra had to say, because she showed up never having been to anything we'd done before. And it's always interesting to see what the perspective is for somebody arriving for the first time.
Yeah, brilliant.
Go ahead, Bill.
Well, you asked about how the people showed up, and I thought of the welcome dinner as well. And I remember sitting at the table with these people who, you know, as I kind of got to hear a little bit more over the later days, like that they were doing, like you said, really amazing things. But that was a really marked contrast to the welcome dinner. It was they were very, very nice people, very polite. They answered anything you asked them, but they were also kind of, I remember one of them saying, "So does anybody really know what's going on here?" And the contrast with that over the next couple days is they obviously became much more talkative about the conference, the program itself, and then more, they got more excited and more open about their work. You know, assisting, I didn't have the chance to spend a lot of time talking, but the change was really obvious. It was amazing. I mean, they were up to these incredible things anyway, but it seemed like one of the biggest changes was their willingness to really be proud and excited about what they were doing. It was really cool.
That's great.
Jesus, they can't hear me.
Great observation.
I can hear you, Breach.
Is that Breach?
Oh, you can hear me all right. That's okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, then.
Thank you.
Say something.
You want me to say something at this stage?
Sure.
Oh, right. I thought I'd said what I was saying.
Well, here, let me ask you a question, Breach. So, because
that would be better.
Yeah, okay. So we've kind of set the stage for, you know, who was there, where we were. So can you share a little bit? So this is a question I know you're not prepared to answer. So off the top of your head, what you see as sort of the impact, you know, what intensive one has to contribute to people who are up to what those folks are up to? How would you describe that? Since you're in all these enrollment conversations, how do you describe what intensive one contributes?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that people who show up all have a commitment to something. They have an idea of why it is that things don't work out the way they would love them to work out, and the challenges that face them. And then they come to intensive one, and quite often in the course of going through the five steps or the limiting story, they realize that what they came thinking was, if they got the answer to this little question, it would change everything. And in fact, they come in at a much deeper level. For instance, there was a minister there who wondered how in her flock he could have the people proud to be who they were without that being, you know, a difficulty to other people. And
right.
She came away realizing that was not the question at all that she needed to answer. And she said that she's only at the beginnings of putting her toe into meeting people from other churches. But
right.
She'll do it. So I think that's one of the things. Also in terms of, it's easy to see when people arrive whose educational background wouldn't be all that wonderful. They're very aware of their need, but there are also people who come who have, as there were this year, people with good government jobs, people who have power in what they're doing, and then they're stricken faces when they realise that the cost they are paying by keeping the job as saying only what will be approved of and not saying anything to rock any boats. We've at least two people working in the government who are going in now to rock some boats because they're not willing any longer to be as they were before they came.
Yeah, one bureaucrat pointed out that there is a town in Northern Ireland that was the ancestral home of both Davy Crockett and one of the grandparents of Che Guevara.
Who knew?
And he was off to create a revolution in the bureaucratic work that he's been doing very competently for some time, but now ready to shake things up. Alan, I just wanted to say that one of the things that's interesting about this, the whole situation in Northern Ireland, is this is the 10th year we've done this. The first year was 1999, and we did it south of Dublin because it seemed to us too risky to try to bring folks like this together within Northern Ireland. And we kept that for the first 3 or 4 years of the conference. We met outside of Northern Ireland. Then we got to meeting, and then things seemed to be hospitable enough we could meet in Northern Ireland without it being perceived by anyone as a dangerous thing to do. And, you know, now more and more they have the same economic troubles the rest of the world is having, but Northern Ireland is growing, and it is coming up in the world from where it has been before the peace process took hold. But the thing that I noticed, not in the workshop so much, but when I was in Belfast and the region I would go and meet with people and attend these different events, is that the political process is functioning fine, but at the level of ordinary people, there are now more peace walls in Belfast than there were before the Good Friday Agreement was signed. There's more physical division. There's more difficulty reaching out. There's still a high degree of intimidation from fringe elements on your own side that don't want to see people come together and work together and talk together. And one of the things you could see happen, which I think somebody earlier referred to, one of the things you could see happen in the workshop is people quite literally erasing their reasons for not taking more risk or finding new ways to take risk that would be productive without, you know, causing them to get into any kind of danger. So while on the one hand it seems like Northern Ireland is in better shape than ever, and I think that's true, on the other hand, I always have the feeling that they need this conversation now more than ever, because the bombs aren't going off anymore, so the urgency of figuring out a way to get along seems to have receded, and it leaves people without a lot of opening and a lot of possibility for working out the much more difficult problems of, you know, how do we live side by side without having a 16-foot wall between us? So that was very, very present for people. It was like going from pessimism to optimism in 3 days. And now, you know, that they've gone home to action.
Yeah, and I think I would say it was going from impossibility to possibility in 3 days. You know, I guess if I were in the enrollment conversation with people attend as participants, that I think is maybe the decisive contribution of Intensive One, is possibility itself. And not what they're expecting on the way in, because I think they're all so focused on contributing to others that they don't quite attend to the space they're in themselves. And there's a way in which the work of the first 2 days is almost entirely to get people to free themselves and create the possibility that for themselves about who they are. And that's just a remarkable. There's that remarkable moment at the end of day two when people see themselves as possibility and start to and go off to what is the sort of instant pub up on the second floor and share stories from this new place of possibility while they are in some new place of possibility. Remarkable time.
I'd like to add to perhaps
yep.
what Anne said, that a recent study indicated that an individual is significantly less likely to be working with someone from the other community today than 10 years ago before the agreement.
Yeah.
Not a little bit, a whole significantly less likely.
Yeah, and the statistics also say that housing segregation has increased since then, and just about every measure of separation has increased. And yet,
Alan? This is Barbara. I was wondering if I could just add something briefly about the participants who are there.
Yes.
I know that this year there was one individual who was a brand new sponsor who attended the intensive. And the intensive has always been a place where sponsors have been very welcomed. And I think many of us think attending and participating an intensive one is just a brilliant introduction to a new sponsor to the Mastery Foundation's work. But I know that this individual is someone who had newly moved to County Cork in Ireland from Switzerland. And what I heard from him afterwards about his reaction of what he learned about his new home island, you know, and the history and what was going on was just amazingly meaningful. And what he saw among the participants just echoes so much of what all of you have been talking about. And so I just wanted to add to the conversation that there can be another type of participant who gains a great deal personally and can contribute a great deal personally at the intensive.
Yeah, that's great, Barbara. Thank you. And you know, and many of the people on this call would have attended the intensive years past, back when it was the program all year that sponsors were invited to attend. So that was the only one that sponsors came to. And now that there are a number of things for sponsors to attend, it's now in smaller numbers attend this one, but it is perhaps the single best way to get a sense, particularly of what's going on in Northern Ireland, of all of our work. So, yeah, thank you. And Ian, it makes a huge difference to have at least one or two sponsors present every year. In fact, Barbara, you'll love this. This is a conversation that just creeps up all the time, which is I talked to one woman who was a really impressive woman who said she'd been waiting. She was very suspicious about the whole thing, and she was calling up Breach constantly before the intensive to ask what this is really about and quizzed me for about a half hour on the first night about why I'd be involved in this. And finally, by the third day, I had breakfast with her, and she goes, you know, the reason I was so suspicious is because for the participants in this program, it's free. You know, there's no cost to them. There's no tuition. There's no room and board. It's covered by everyone who makes the Mastery Foundation financially viable. And so she was like, well, what do they want from me if this is free? And it wasn't until the third day that she was really, really clear that there was nothing we wanted from her other than to support her. And having some sponsors present allows people to kind of see where the money comes from and allows people to ask a sponsor why they might be doing that. So it really clears up part of the mystery of the Mastery Foundation. So it's in addition to whatever else someone might contribute by being present, when a sponsor is present, they contribute a little clarity about how this thing gets underwritten. So thanks for bringing that up. There's a few minutes left in the call, so if anyone have some questions about this year's intensive or about the outcomes?
Alan, it's Barbara again.
Can
you share perhaps one wonderful thing about the party on the last night? The event always goes on, because I know there's always amazing things that happen there. Some years they're more stunning than others, but if you could just share with us the flavor.
It was another magical party. I was quite grateful that Cassandra was there from the team from the United States, although she's in Donegal this morning. She's actually from the United States, because she held up our end with the singing. So there's a, I should say for anyone who hasn't been, there's a, what is in Irish culture, a traditional celebration where people bring their party pieces. And because this happens at the end of a transformational program, it's particularly bright-eyed and amazing, and sort of magical. And this was another magical evening. And maybe Jean, who played a role in making all that happen, and Cassandra could share what they saw, and Patience.
Okay, it's Patience, and there's just two things. Yes, our Cassandra, if you could have just imagined this, it was absolutely fantastic. Out in the middle of this room with this, well, how old is Jim? 50s, at least, I guess, former prisoner, and the two of them out in the middle of the room singing American Pie. Had to be a real showstopper, and it was. And the other thing is, I believe that there's a possibility that Mastery has discovered a very, very, very excellent poet by the name of Horig Toomey. He was my breath was taken away by the quality of his poetry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to second the comment on the poetry. I mean, his work was really just breathtaking. And also the marriage counseling couple were just wonderful to watch them sing together, and I think maybe one of my favorite pieces was the ghost story she told. Turned out all the lights, and she did a ghost story ballad in the Ulster Scots voice. It was wonderful.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing.
And it was the sort of design that Jim made up was, well, anyway, it just sort of evolved in a way, was that there were people from every community doing something. Even the few Cambodians managed to sing and dance something that was reflective of their community. So I felt like the communities really balanced very nicely this year.
So as usual, if you weren't there, you missed one of the better parties of the year.
That's right. Including, I should say that, in Bedouin culture, at least in Rahat, where we are somewhat familiar with the culture there, the Bedouin, the boy teenagers, do this sort of, I don't know what how to describe it. I'll say line dancing is a little bit of an understatement, but they have their in a row with their arms around each other's shoulders. They dance in this sort of almost a frenzied-like kind of dancing with a lot of amazing kicking and maneuvering that's just breathtaking to watch. And our friend from Rahat led a group in that, both males and females. But I took one glance at the group as he was sort of at the front of the line. The person at the front does some moves, and then everybody else in the line follows the moves. That's how that dancing works. It's sort of like the person in the front of the one end of the line is the captain of the dance. And so he was leading this group, but I just happened to notice there was a Vietnamese woman from France. A Cambodian woman from France. There was two Israelis, three people from Northern Ireland, both Protestant and Catholic, and they were all in this row together dancing, and it happens every year, but it just a little moment of magic. That, you know, maybe there's another possibility for this whole planet.
And I couldn't quite follow it all, but the Jewish Israelis were quite adamant that they wanted the Arab dance people to go first.
Yes.
They didn't want to be pushing their way forward in the queue.
And there were, but this year there were enough people from Israel to actually carry a tune, and they sang a song from the Baal Shem Tov about the world being nothing more than a bridge and not being afraid to cross it. It was really quite a magical evening. In the last minutes of this call, would anyone who was at the conference want to share at all what they saw in people leaving the conference? There was that final breakfast where everyone's hugging and saying goodbye. We get thanked over and over again, and people are just in sort of this magical space that you would expect after a rigorous transformational experience.
Well, the only comments that I would get at the breakfast on the last day, in addition, I mean, as you said, the thanks and hugging and kissing was that indeed there were two or three different people that were just so grateful for the opportunity to be there and literally verbalized about, you know, that it was a, that it had been given to them as a gift, meaning their accommodations and their food and all that sort of thing. And that they were walking away with, you know, everything that any human being they thought could get.
Yeah,
I'd forgotten about that when Ellen was talking about, or Anne was talking about sponsors being there. That was something that came up several times on the Thursday morning, that they were really glad and thought not only their...
To be sure
to thank them for that and their being there.
Yeah.
Because their being there, there were communications that went on that meant a whole lot to them. So I'd forgotten all about that.
And I just wanted to say I saw the young man who was the Protestant teacher in the Catholic school, and I saw him on the third day, and he was sort of waiting patiently to talk to me, and there was a woman was crying and hugging everyone, saying that she hadn't actually taken a break from her work in 11 years. This is sort of a condition that people living out of a commitment may find themselves in, and how inspired she was from this three-day break. And then he said, then he shared that he hadn't felt this much passion for his work since he started it, that he was going back with all new energy, and that he wanted to bring the Mastery Foundation to work with the kids in his classes.
Mm.
Which I thought was pretty, and he goes, they could use a little empowerment too. He said,
and he also said to me, Ellen,
yeah.
Aren't you going to have the principal of the school at the Mastery Foundation next year?
Oh, very good. What did you say, Breach?
I said, I sure am, and you're going to be part of the enrollment.
Great.
The other young men who. Has been mentioned already, but what struck me was before he went, he said, with a heart of love, I will be able to speak to each of the church leaders.
Could you repeat that, please, Bridge?
With a heart of love, I will be able to speak to each of the church leaders. And, I mean, I know someone else who was negotiating with the church leaders while we were actually in Drumontaine. I can tell you it's not an easy thing.
Right.
And yet, calm and a heart of love, he's going to do it.
That's great.
Yeah, there were a lot of promises made as part of the one of the last exercises in the workshop. You know, people say what action step they're going to take when they get home. So you might be thinking this week about a lot of people who are sticking their necks out in a way they had no idea they were going to be doing when they first showed up at that course.
And as Eugene said, I do want to pass on behalf of all those participants who were thankful that Mastery Foundation made all that possible. It's, you know, difficult to express the gratitude secondhand for the space, the effort, and what's made available to people living with that kind of commitment, who spend their pretty much all their waking hours serving other people, to have the experience of being served, to have the experience of being supported, invested in, and acknowledged. And that's all possible because of the, as Anne said in her invitation, the faithful supporters of the Mastery Foundation, who underwrite everything the Mastery Foundation does. So I wanted to say, as someone who was at Intensive One earlier this week, on behalf of everyone who participated from Israel, Cambodia, and Northern Ireland, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a difference.
Yep.
And you've made a difference.
Yes, could I add to that a thank you to Barbara for the certificates that you sent us?
You're very welcome.
I love the certificates they get, and also for enrolling Bill as a sponsor, and but particularly to Anne and Alan and Michael and Jean and Patience, Cassandra this year, as well as the two from Northern Ireland, but in particular what I call the core team, who year after year after year show up. That commitment is just, in my mind, huge. You know, it's easy to come once and do something and leave it, but every year you turn up again. I thank you for that.
Right.
Well, you can tell we like doing it.
No place we'd rather be.
Oh, how great.
Maybe a good way to end this call. You know, we say sometimes the Intensive One is all about possibility. And, you know, this year, Anne, you didn't read... usually read a poem or two, and there's a Shel Silverstein poem I happen to have in front of me. I don't know, do you have it in front of you, Anne?
I don't. You'll have to read it.
All right. So maybe as a way to complete the call, it's a pretty short one. But Shel Silverstein, who ostensibly writes for children, but I think writes for everybody, has a very short poem called Listen to the Mustn't that Anne often reads during, I think, in day three of the intensive. Goes like this. Listen to the mustn'ts, child. Listen to the don'ts. Listen to the shouldn'ts, the impossibles, the won'ts. Listen to the never haves, then listen close to me. Anything can happen, child. Anything. That's, I think this perfectly captures the space that gets created for these unrecognized heroes in the world who are holding our communities together, even in places where they're a bit torn and frayed. So I think that ends our call. Thank you for joining us and creating the listening and getting connected. And we'll be making this call available by recording to folks who would like to be keep up with what the Mastery Foundation is up to in the world. So thanks, everyone. And you're always welcome to last Saturday of the month phone calls. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.